Temperature will bounce back up there again to around 81. It should be dry. Right now, 77. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next. Support for The Morning Show comes from Carthage College, where students can conduct NASA research, produce an original play, or join an in-house marketing agency as early as their freshman year. More information is available at carthage.edu. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm deeply grateful for the opportunity to speak with writer Reed Forgrave about a new book that is so important. And although it is a tremendously heartbreaking story, it's also an inspiring story in many respects. It's a book called Love, Zach, Small-Time Football and the Life and Death of an American Boy. The American boy in question was a young man named Zach Easter, who was ferociously devoted to the game of football, a game that was loved by every member of his family, and including an older brother who was a football superstar and a father who was a coach. Unfortunately, Zach Easter suffered a series of concussions, which ultimately led to him developing what is known as CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And ultimately, Zach Easter, at the age of 24, took his own life. Reed Forgrave was granted extraordinary access to the people closest to Zach Easter, including every member of his family, his girlfriend, his coach, his trainer, many people who knew Zach Easter before and after he began to succumb to the terrible effects of CTE. And Reed Forgrave has written a truly remarkable book that tells us this story. And it also prompts us to consider the place of football in American life, the risks that it poses, particularly to the youngest people who play it, and raises intriguing questions about what can be done about this. Is this a risk that we simply must accept, or should we go even further than we already have gone to try to mitigate some of these high risks for such terrible injury? Reed Forgrave has written extensively about sports and other topics for New York Magazine, Mother Jones Magazine, and a number of different publications, and has covered college football and the NFL quite extensively. Currently writes for the Star Tribune in Minneapolis. And the article in which he first wrote about Zach Easter and his sad story is included in Best American Sports Writing 2018. This book, again, is titled Love, Zach, Small Town Football and the Life and Death of an American Boy, published by Algonquin Press. Reed Forgrave, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
So incredibly thankful and grateful for you having me on. This is a tough topic, right? If you're a football fan, you don't want to talk about this. You want to go watch the game last night. You know, you want to spend your Sundays and your Saturdays and Friday nights thinking about and cheering on football. But I think this is a nuanced topic. Like, Look, Zach Easter's story, I think, ultimately is a cautionary tale. But it's not an anti-football book. His story is not an anti-football story. Some people can certainly come away from the book getting that message personally. But, you know, when Zach died at age 24, he still swore by the game of football. It was still what he was so proud of his identity as this sort of roughneck football player, toughest guy in the field, until his dying day. Yeah, he had some reservations. He wishes he hadn't had so many concussions. He wishes he wasn't so reckless. But this was really a central part to his identity. And here in the upper Midwest, in Minnesota, where I live, in Wisconsin, these are things that are very real and I think very difficult questions for parents to grapple with. I have two young sons myself, and thinking about how to raise the American man into the American boy into a man in 21st century America, it's complicated. And football is a really big part of that.
Right, a part of that identity. And it is not easy to let go of that. And it's also not easy to sort of fold into that love of football this new understanding about some of the damage that can be done. And we'll explore all of that and much more. I think one of the reasons why I especially loved your book, I mean, I think anybody with any kind of interest in this topic would love your book, but I especially loved it because I spent most of my young life, or younger years, I should say, growing up in the state of Iowa in relatively small towns. Mm. And I've been to Indianola, Iowa, and I very nearly went to Simpson College, which is where Zach Easter's father was a coach. So when you are talking about Iowa and some of these places, I can really relate. And when I look at the photographs of young Zach Easter, he just looks like somebody that I know somehow. I mean, it's a familiar-looking face, and in many respects, a story that will deeply resonate with a lot of people. I want to just take a moment to have you talk about the state of Iowa, because you spend a little time talking about Iowa in the first chapter of the book, which is called The Seed. You call Iowa, among other things, an understated place, and it's certainly a place that you wish the rest of the country better understood. I want to just give you a quick opportunity to talk a little bit about the state of Iowa and some of the people that you met in the telling of this story.
Yeah, the rest of the country thinks of Iowa, you know, once every 4 years, and they think of it as a place of seed corn hats and politicians talking on top of hay bales at the Iowa State Fair because the caucuses are right around the corner. Iowa's complex. I lived there for 10 years. I was a transplant. I now live in Minnesota, but I have a lot of connections to that state. Both my in-laws are from small town Iowa. My mother-in-law is a farm girl, and she, the way that she described, I asked her once, I was like, what's the most beautiful place you've ever been to? And she had the greatest answer, which I actually sort of paraphrase in this book. She thought about it. And she's like, a spring, and it was like a breeze over the soybean fields in Iowa. I was like, wow, what an image, right? You think of beauty, and you think of the mountains, and you think of the ocean, you think of lots of dramatic places. Iowa has this very understated, subtle beauty to it that I think is, you know, not necessarily unique to Iowa. The Great Plains, the upper Midwest, sort of that hilly place where you get like endless fields of corn and beans. I really fell in love with Iowa during my decade there and fell in love with the people of Iowa. I know, you know, with politics these days, it can be really easy to kind of just shoehorn states into, hey, this is what this state thinks about the coronavirus or abortion or whatever. Iowa's a very complex place. And in relation to football and in relation to this book, I think Iowa has a very distinct football mentality. And I don't just mean the annual Cy-Hawk game, which is what they call the Iowa State football game that's played every year. Look, in Texas, we think of Texas football and we think of it as an obsession, right? You know, small towns that have high school football stadiums that fit 20,000 people, right? Friday night lights. In the American South. We think of SEC football. We think of, like, college football is the end-all, be-all. In Iowa, in the upper Midwest, in Minnesota and Wisconsin and Michigan and all these places, there's a distinct football culture as well. And Zach was very much part and parcel of that. It was this, or it is this, smash-mouth football culture. 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Run, you know, rub dirt in it and take a lap. That sort of culture where it's not necessarily speed and skill that wins, but it's strength and being able to fight through the pain and being able to conquer adversity, all these things that those, you know, cliche football coach phrases. And when I think of Iowa, when I think of Zach Easter's family, his family's lived on this same land for, I can't remember, for 6 or 7 generations. It goes back to the Civil War. To the, you know, the decade before the Civil War is when Zach's family migrated from the coal mines of Pennsylvania to the fields of Iowa, before it was even a state. And they really helped tame this land, living off the land. You know, the ups and downs of that, the difficulties of that. They talk about the family farm during the 1 year during the Depression, during the Dust Bowl, had exactly 1 bushel of rye the entire season. That was all they had. And they had to figure things out. And that, look, in modern-day America, you look at farms and you're talking about, like, 1,500 acres of corn and wheat and beans that you get on a big combine and you get your GPS connected to it and you press go. It's a very different type of farming than it was 50 years ago or 100 years ago. That was a type of farming that was sort of a way to prove your manhood. It's very different now. It's much more like agribusiness. And instead of proving your manhood through being able to bring food to your family, now you just go to the supermarket, you go to Walmart, you go to Aldi's. Now I think football is a central part of that. And for for Zach Easter and his family, and just for big parts of the rural upper Midwest, there's two ways that boys can prove themselves as worthy to be men. I know it's a little bit reductive, but I think there are vast swaths of our culture, especially like red America, that believes this way. And it's football and it's hunting. Mm. And those were the two things for Zach Easter that were central to his identity. That was like his proving ground. That was where his dad would take out all 3 Easter boys, take him out to the fields, be like, we're going to go hunt pheasant. When they're 6 years old, you can walk next side beside dad. And if you're a mile away from home and you start whining because it's cold and wet, all right, kid, tough cookies. You can walk back by yourself. You can stay out here and, you know, try to figure it out, or you can come with dad, whine all you want. I know it can sound a little bit harsh, but as a parent of 2 young and frequently whiny boys, like, I get it. I want them to be tough. And football, there's a dark side to that, like, tough it out mentality. Something that we very much saw with Zach Easter, fight through his concussions. Don't pay attention to him. Hide them. Hide them from doctors. Don't go to therapy. Don't talk things out. There's a dark side to that. But there's also, you know, people would call that these days toxic masculinity. But there's also a beautiful, wonderful side to that, that parents, I think, they want their boys to be tough. They don't want them to be tough at all expense. They want them to be in touch with their feelings. But they certainly don't want them whining about how their macaroni and cheese isn't the right type of macaroni and cheese. You want your kids to tough it out. And I think that's a lesson that Midwestern football culture is great at teaching.
Right. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, you are, I think, very fair and, in a sense, open-hearted in the way that you explore this. I mean, someone else might have come in and written about all of this and about this kind of mentality or mindset in entirely dismissive terms, and you do not do that. I mean, you also explore the ways in which this kind of life can be, in fact, very compelling and something that is in a sense difficult to relinquish or moderate or whatever. And that's also, of course, part of the story of Zach Easter. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Reed Forgrave. We're talking about his book, Love Zach, Small Town Football and the Life and Death of an American Boy. Zach Easter was a young man devoted to the game of football, which his whole family loved. Unfortunately, he suffered a series of concussions, which ultimately led to the development of this brain disorder known as CTE, which eventually prompted him to end his young life at the age of 24. And this book is the story of that, told in so many different layers and from so many different perspectives. Before we tell Zach's story, I want to just touch on the fact that you actually sat down with Zach Easter's family 2 weeks after he had taken his life. I mean, shooting himself and committing suicide. 2 weeks later, you were sitting down with them. Would you mind sharing just how that came about, and maybe a little more about the circumstances under which they welcomed you into their home at such an immensely painful moment?
I've been in this business for 20-some years, and there's only a handful of moments that I can point at that are just burned into my mind, and that's one of them. I first heard of Zach Easter when I read his obituary. It had been passed on to me by a friend. I had used to write for the Des Moines Register. We had recently moved up to Minnesota, and a friend said, "Hey, you should check out this obituary. This is remarkable. Maybe you should think about writing about it." And at the time, yeah, sure. Concussions, important issue. This was 2015, end of 2015. I'm good at writing about family suffering and the meaning they find behind suffering. I was like, sure, I'll write a 2,000-word story, maybe pitch a story. At the time, I was writing for Fox Sports and doing television work for Fox Sports 1. Maybe we'd have a television story on Fox Sports 1. This seems like an absolutely worthy story. And I remember reading this obituary. It was right before Christmas. I was home visiting family, and this last paragraph of Zach's obituary just hit me in the gut. If you don't mind, I'm just going to read that paragraph right now.
Sure.
It's so powerful to see this and remember the context of this. This is days after he passed away by suicide. After, by the way, having a suicide attempt 5 weeks before that. So his family knew this wasn't completely out of nowhere. Zach had been kind of going down this downward spiral in a sense. And this obituary, you see this picture of this good-looking 24-year-old guy with this huge smile. You read about, hey, he just graduated from college, graduated with honors. He was in the Iowa National Guard, had just won Soldier of the Year. World seemed like it was this kid's oyster. He seemed like he had everything going for him. In this last paragraph, here's what it says. Zach was a selfless person. His last wish was to make sure that no one else has to struggle from head trauma like he did. It is important to Zach to tell his story about CTE, a disease he attempted to manage for years. He suffered from severe migraines, brain tremors, slurred speech, blurred vision, and dementia, among other physical ailments. He unselfishly is donating his brain, along with a detailed diary that documented his life, so that no one suffers the way that he did. He bravely fought this silent disease for years until he was no longer able. His spirit will always be with us. Zach asked that memorials be donated to the Concussion Legacy Foundation so that further research can be done on this disease. His final request is that people talk about CTE, support more research, and value knowledge. So that's the context of me reading this and reaching out to people I knew in Iowa, people I knew in Indianola, saying, can you help put me in contact with this family? And I got in touch with Brenda Easter, his mother, and she said, come on down. And it was the first Sunday of 2016, January 2016. And I came to their house. They live kind of out in the woods in the cornfields outside of Indianola. And I spent probably about 4 hours sitting on their living room floor with Zach's mom and dad. Two incredibly courageous people. Zach had left behind all these writings, which are cited extensively in the book. And these writings did two things for his family. One, they gave an explanation. So often with suicide, we just don't know. We end up asking why, and just being confounded by that question. Zach very much explained the why. He had lost hope, and here was why. And the second part of it was he gave his family a charge to go forward with. Hey, go spread my story so other people don't have to suffer the way that I did. That's a remarkable thing for him to have done. And I think without that, it would have been so hard for his family to open up so quickly and so fully. I've never had a family going through tragedy that's been so utterly open and cooperative and willing to share their pain as well as their joys. So I'm sitting in their living room talking about Zach with his parents, with his girlfriend, with his younger brother. He has an older brother and a younger brother, both of whom played football with him. His athletic trainer, a couple family friends. There was an aunt who was sitting in the kitchen writing thank you notes to people who had just come to his funeral a few days before when I'm in there. And by the way, I'm sitting in his living room talking about all this. And there were two images that struck me aside from the family and just feeling their pain. One was on the wall in their living room was this beautiful 10-point buck. Zach was a big hunter. His senior year of high school, he'd gotten this buck. It was right after he had three concussions his senior year, ended his football career, had them over the course of about 2 months, really destructive concussions. And his senior year was not what you'd want a senior year to be, but this was the one moment of that senior year that he pointed to and was like, this was awesome. I got this buck. I got the best buck that my family's ever had. And here it still hangs on the family wall. And then the other thing that struck me was this whole time we're talking, there's a TV's on in the background right behind me, and it's the Packers-Vikings game, last game of the regular season. Zach's favorite team, the Packers, against his dad's favorite team, the Vikings. All the men in that room, myself included, by the way, are sneaking peeks at the game, seeing what's going on, looking at our fantasy football scores every once in a while. And I think that just underscored to me how complicated this question is, that we understand now in a way that we didn't understand when Zach was playing football in high school. He graduated in 2010. His last season was in 2009. We weren't talking about concussions and CTE, and we weren't referring to concussions as mild traumatic brain injuries back then, which we should now, by the way. If we're not, please refer to it as that, because I think it hits you a little bit harder. But we're conflicted about this. We love football, and we recognize that that it can be really dangerous. And I think all levels of football have come to that realization over the past decade. And instead of this denialism that we used to have, because, you know, you don't want to, if you're a football fan, you don't want to hear about this stuff. You'd rather just go and watch the game, man. It's fun. Drink a beer, have a brat, watch the game. But I think football as an institution, NFL in particular, has recognized over the past decade this is an existential question for this sport. And they got to figure it out. And
right.
I think they have made huge steps in doing so.
Right. I think it's maybe Zach's football coach who says something to the effect that he misses the old days of football, the old days when we were naive. I mean, when we watched football and we could watch it in a sense without any awareness whatsoever of this potential for terrible damage being suffered by some of the players.
Without any guilt.
Exactly. I mean, those are words we see over and over again in this book. We just didn't know. Let's talk about Zach Easter and early in the book, you describe a lot of what he was like as a youngster. At one point, you call him Tom Sawyer reborn. I mean, incredibly energetic, adventurous, believing he was invincible. And, of course, those are traits that he will take into his teenage years and into the years when he begins to play football really, really seriously. It's probably important for us to understand the kind of player that he was and, in a sense, the limitations that he brought to the field in comparison to his older brother, who was a spectacular football star. There were a lot of things that Zach had to do to compensate. Tell us more about, in general, the kind of player he was and the way he felt he had to play the game in order to score any kind of significant success.
What made Zach a remarkable football player was not his body. It wasn't his strength. It wasn't his speed. It was in this, you know, look back on this as this cruel and tragic twist. It was his mind. He was fearless. You know, some would even say he was reckless. He didn't have, you know, football, you think of big, strong, fast, right? He wasn't that. His dad was that. His dad played Division I football and then became a football coach, small college, and then was Zach's defensive coordinator in high school. Was that for all three of his boys. His older brother, he had the body. He was a strong safety. Ended up going on to play college football. Was in his, you know, the Indianola High School Athletic Hall of Fame. Just this heavy hitter, great football player. Zach was a great football player, but it wasn't because he was such a big dude. He was kind of small, but he didn't care about getting hurt. He was the, you know, over and over again, you see in his writings how proud he was of this identity, as he was always the toughest dude on the field. He, you know, put team and put football and put winning before his own body. It was something that was central to him. And yet, it doesn't happen to everyone who thinks that way. But Zach, whether it was because he was susceptible, whether it was because he had one concussion that led to another, there can be that sort of domino effect with concussions that I think as a parents in particular should be very aware of. But Zach's fearlessness, recklessness, however you want to phrase it, led to, starting in middle school, lots of concussions. I mean, talked about headaches going back to middle school. He referred to himself, he played fullback and linebacker, two pretty heavy hitting positions. And he referred to himself as a fullback, as a road grader. He just like plow the road in front of him. You watch some tape of Zach, and he's just flying all over the field. Again, not the biggest, not the fastest, but the guy who has that kind of little unhinged look in his eye that you don't want to step in his way. And you can see that in other ways with Zach. He was, whether it was riding the four-wheeler on the family land and going off the jumps and maybe wrecking it a little bit, whether it was when he was 7 or 8 years old and saw an ambulance going by his family's house and decided to pretend to wreck his bike just to see if the ambulance would stop and get him. He was a wild child, not in a devious way, in this very sweet, innocent, boyish way. Mm-hmm. And I look at my younger son, who's 5. I see a lot of Zach Easter in him. He's got that wild side. He has that. We were, you know, for opening weekend of NFL weekend, we were just watching football, and he turns and he's like, "Dad, I want to play." I'm like, "Oh boy, this is gonna be a complicated discussion." Maybe I'm pretty sure my wife wouldn't allow football or hockey, frankly, just because of the fear of injuries. But you know, I'm gonna be watching football with him, you know, for years, and it's gonna be a different discussion when he's 14 compared to when he's 5.
Right.
At 5, when I talk about it with my wife, it's like, oh, he's, and of course he's not going to play football. That's my wife's view, at least. Mostly my view. But when he's 14 and he's entering high school and all his friends are trying out for the team and he's been watching the Vikings lose every single Sunday for the past 10 years with his dad, and we toss around the football in the backyard, and it's kind of, you know, we're not like a football-obsessed family. My wife certainly isn't, but I love football. I look forward to football season. It's one of those, you know, joys of fall and winter. When the days are getting shorter, I can look forward to watching some football. It becomes a really nuanced question, I think, for our family now, I think for Zach's family, and families all across America.
It absolutely is, yes. Specifically, as Zach Easter played football, especially at the high school level, one of the really interesting observations you make in a chapter called The Hammer is that at this point in time, you say, even before concussions were the kind of topic that they are now, you write, Indianola coaches taught safety through proper tackling. See what you hit, they repeated. Eyes up, they drilled. Run and rap, they shouted. Zach heard it all, and he ignored it. Explain very specifically the way in which Zach Easter insisted on tackling people, because this appears to be a significant contributing factor in why he suffered so many concussions and also such serious concussions.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty simple. Use your head as a weapon. That was one of Zach's techniques, one of his philosophies that went all through his football career. And his coaches would call him out for it. They'd be like, Zach, you know, keep your head up. No, I don't think as vociferously as they would today. But this was something you talked to his teammates, you talked to his coaches, and something that they knew. They knew that Zach was overly aggressive and that he would use his head. But, like, it's sort of a risk and reward thing, especially going back then. Like, now you use your head too much and out comes the flag, right? 15-yard penalty. You're in trouble, young man, if you get a 15-yard penalty. If you just, you know, hit someone a little bit too hard and use your head back then, there was sort of a badge of courage to that, right? Not every player was willing to put himself in harm's way the way that Zach would. And I think football coaches now, they got a really difficult job where they got to walk that line. You still want people who go out there, who look fear in the eye and are willing to face it, right? Like, that's kind of what football's all about. That's what combat sports are all about. You step in that ring, you step your greatest fear. You know that your career could end in the next minute because, look, these sports, as safe as we want to make them, they're never going to be fully safe. That's what Zach did. He'd use his head, and that it was both his blessing and his curse. Ends up being his downfall, right? Getting all these concussions very directly. I know there's a stew of things going on with Zach Easter. There's drug and alcohol addiction. There's some depression, mental health issues that I think are, depending on your view, either created or exacerbated by all this post-concussion stuff. There's a bunch of stuff going on with him, but I don't think anyone could deny the very significant parts of concussions played in this. And really all goes back to using his head as a weapon. Football is done. You can never make football safe. I don't think anyone wants to. You can make it safer, and I think that is what has happened over the past decade. But, the type of player that Zach was, I think it's been attempted to legislate that out of the game. You're still going to get freak accidents in football. You're still going to get what are referred to as subconcussive hits, those sort of smaller hits to the head that pile up over time that aren't a concussion, but if you're a lineman, you're going to smack heads with a guy, you know, 50, 60 times a game. And I heard one doctor say it this way. I thought this was a really, really good way of phrasing it. You know, if a concussion is $1, you can have 10 dimes, 10 subconcussive hits, and they can add up to the same thing. That to me, like we talk about, like the future of football, it's those dimes, it's those subconcussive hits, the things that you really can't legislate out of the game. And the science hasn't fully figured out. Those are the things that, to me, are the most concerning.
Mm. I really appreciate the time you take speaking with Zach's head football coach, Eric Cleaver, and also the woman who was the trainer for the football team, a woman by the name of Sue Wilson. And you tell us Eric Cleaver is not what we might assume a football coach in a small town in Iowa to be. I mean, he is an intelligent guy with profound and sincere concern for his students, and who feels great grief over the death of Zach Easter, and is really grappling with the way in which perception of this game he loves so much is changing. I really appreciate all that you have him sharing with us. But I want to take a moment to talk about Sue Wilson, the trainer of the team. And I think you do such a good job of conveying to us the really tricky relationship that exists between young football players and the trainer who has the authority to take them out of a game. And it makes the whole matter of trust between trainer and player, or openness in terms of what a player is actually feeling, makes that very, very difficult. Tell us more about that relationship, and in particular, how it played out specifically with Zach Easter.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because Sue Wilson is one of the heroes in this book. And by the way, the fact that she is a she is a very important part of this, because she comes in, I think it was about 2 years before Zach started in high school football. So mid-2000, 2004, 2005, gets hired as a trainer. And she steps into this ultra-masculine world that wasn't paying attention to concussions, just wasn't on their radar. It wasn't on anyone's radar then, except for Sue Wilson. It was on her radar. She was paying attention to this. And she came in to this macho environment with, yeah, she's going to wrap the ankles and she's going to treat the minor injuries and sometimes those major injuries. And she's going to, you know, be there in the way that you think of a traditional trainer. But concussions were very much on her mind, even in the, you know, mid-2000s when it wasn't on too many people's minds. And there were plenty of times when on a Friday night, Indianola's playing against one of their rivals at home, on the road, whatever, and she'd see a player who had what she thought, and again, concussions are difficult. You can't just diagnose them. It's not like a broken arm where you get an x-ray and you're like, yep, your arm's broken. There's a lot of guesswork involved, even for doctors. But she'd sort of say, hey, it looks like you have a likely concussion. I can see your eyes moving all over the place. You're dizzy. You may be a little bit nauseous. That hit was just too big and too loud. And she'd take the player's helmet away from them. And she'd hold it. She'd be like, you're not going back in the field. Players would fight her. Players would swear at her. Coaches would be pissed off about it. Zach's dad would be one of them. He'd be like, I had lots of concussions when I was playing football. It didn't hurt me. I'm fine. Concussions affect everyone differently, right? It's such a complicated medical thing. It's sort of like one of the last frontiers of medicine is figuring out the brain. But Sue Wilson would take these helmets. Coaches would fight her about it. Players would fight her about it. Fans would fight her about it. Parents would be like, get my kid back in the game. There was one time when there was a star, I think a wide receiver, who got knocked out of a game. Sue stole his helmet. And there was a doctor in the stands, you know, family practice doctor from Indianola. And he complained to the athletic director, what qualifications does this lady have? That's the sort of culture that she stepped into. Fast forward 15 years from there, after Zach Easter's death, after the world of football over the past decade has really been turned upside down, all these high-profile suicides of former NFL players or college players, I think none more high-profile than Junior Seau's, which I see as very much like a history-shaping moment where we said, oh, wow, Junior Seau, superhero, he was suffering from this? My goodness, this is serious. Now Sue Wilson is, she has power. She has influence. She actually ran for school board just a couple years ago based on the idea of student-athlete safety. That was her platform. She's on all sorts of boards with the Iowa governor. She's involved in these scientific studies. This is something that Zach Easter's legacy is very much carried on through her. She feels just like his coach, Eric Kluver. She feels an enormous amount of guilt. Did she do everything that she could? And yet both Eric Kluver and Sue Wilson, they come back to football. They say, yeah, of course there's a lot of risks to it. We know that now. But there's so many rewards to it as well. Eric Kluver talks about these sort of dark nights of the soul that he had after Zach's death. And wondering to himself, you know, looking over Zach's casket a few days after he died, looking at his body and saying, how can I keep going back to this sport? What am I doing? Really questioning himself. And he's thought deeply about this. And you know, part of it is because football is so central to his identity and to what he thinks the American man is. But he says, you know what? Yes, there are problems with this. And yes, we absolutely need to be safer. And he's taken all sorts of precautions in practices and in games to be safer about this. But ultimately, he does believe, I know this is a pretty controversial thing among some people, but he believes that the rewards that boys and young men get from football, and frankly that our society gets from football, are greater than those risks. He now knows those risks are very real.
Yeah, he calls football at one point the ultimate team sport, and a sport that can teach those who play it all kinds of incredibly valuable lessons, perhaps not learnable to the same extent in any other way. But you do tell us, in the wake of Zach's death, Kluver has changed the way he coaches football. He has drastically decreased the contact in practices. His coaches now teach hawk tackling, a rugby-style tackle popularized by Seattle Seahawks coach Pete Carroll. It tries to take the head out of the impact of the tackle, as opposed to previous styles of tackling that taught players to get their head out in front. Players are now taught to keep their heads behind and to avoid slamming their face masks with the ball carrier. In preseason meetings with parents, Kluver stresses the importance of taking concussions seriously and tells them that any player with a suspected concussion will go through a concussion protocol. People know Zach's story, Kluver says. It's the elephant in the room. So this is a legacy that very much lives on years after Zach's tragic death. As we've already touched on, he ends up suffering a career-ending concussion, which means that essentially he loses his senior year both on the football team and on the wrestling team as well. And in many respects, this begins a slow decline that becomes more precipitous as he enters his early 20s, going to community college, but doing lots of drinking, struggling as a student, entering the Iowa National Guard at one point. And he says himself, using the Army to mask what I was really dealing with inside. One of the ways we can chronicle his last months is because of all kinds of exchanges that apparently were preserved between Zach and his girlfriend, Allie. Tell us more about those text exchanges and emails and other communication that somehow survives, which can, in a sense, allow us to walk with Zach through these really difficult last months of his life.
Yeah, there are, I guess, what historians would call, like, primary sources. There are three big primary sources that I used in this book that are Zach's direct words. One is his journal that he kept, not a daily journal, but he'd write in it a couple times a week the last 6 months of his life when he was really struggling with this, just talking about his ups and downs with this disease, or what he suspected was a disease, so you can't diagnose it until after death. One is this 39-page sort of autobiography of sorts that he titled Concussions, My Silent Struggle, that detailed, hey, here's what I've dealt with since third grade when I started football. Here's how this sport's important to me, and here's how it, you know, really made me struggle in life. It's a bit of a suicide note, in a sense. And then the third primary source are these text messages, hundreds of them, between Zach and Allie. And they aren't just like, hey, can you meet me at the movies at 7 o'clock? These are detailed text messages during his last days on Earth, his last months on Earth, between him and Allie. Allie is another one of those heroes in this book. Zach was embarrassed. He was really embarrassed of his struggles. He didn't tell his parents about his ups and downs until, you know, several months before he died. Allie was really the only one that he felt comfortable enough with to be this vulnerable kid who was really struggling. And he told her everything. She was, in a sense, his therapist. And you see that come out in these text messages. They're not all incredibly depressing. There's a lot of beauty in these. As much as this book is a tragedy, it's also a love story. I mean, there's a reason that the title of this book is Love, Zach. There's a lot of love here between Zach and his family, between Zach and his girlfriend, between Zach and football. But you really get to see how Zach, it's not this never-ending descent into darkness. It's very much this roller coaster of the last several months of his life, where he goes from, I'm going to beat this thing. I'm gonna be the Zach Easter I used to be. I'm going to be the kid that everyone loved, the smart kid, the likable kid, the fun kid, the one who enjoys life. I'm going to go apply for all these jobs. I'm going to be a millionaire by age 30. I'm going to go to business school at Case Western Reserve in Cleveland, Ohio, where my girlfriend's about to leave for law school. I'm going to do all these things in life. And then two days later, I've completely lost hope. I can't do this. I couldn't even walk into therapy today. I just sat in a parking lot. I hate myself. I'm just going to get some ecstasy and some cocaine and a handle of Captain Morgan's rum and put myself into a stupor. There's this one exchange in these text messages where Allie's like, Zach, where are you? Parents can't find you. He was living in his parents' house by that point because he couldn't afford his own apartment. He burned through all his money. Zach, where are you? Parents can't find you. They're so worried about you. And he just writes back, I'm in Oklahoma. She's like, what? And he just upped and took the car and was like, I'm going on a road trip. See you later. And just drove to Oklahoma one day, stopped in Kansas City, went to a strip club by himself, ordered pizza in his hotel, came back the next day, freaked people out because this is when they were really worried about him. But these sort of, I think, real-time interactions are, you know, as a writer, as a reporter, are so powerful because you can look back on things with rose-colored glasses, right? Or you can look back at them and be like, oh, things were all so dark. This is much more real than that and nuanced, and it really details this young man's ups and downs. And if there's one thing that I think is most powerful about this book, it's that you get the sense that Zach is speaking directly to you from beyond the grave. That's not me. That's not the writer doing it. It's just me getting out of the way. And was Zach a beautiful Shakespearean writer? No. But was Zach incredibly in touch with his emotions and able to express that? Remarkably so. And that's the power in this book, whether it's text messages or journals or this autobiography of sorts that he wrote.
Yes. You're right. He is not a polished writer. There's all kinds of spelling mistakes and so on. But he is incredibly open and allows himself to be vulnerable in terms of this autobiography and this journal and these exchanges with Allie, the one person with which he could really reveal his deepest feelings and vulnerabilities. Although you tell us whenever he confided to her, it was always with the addendum, don't tell my family. I mean, he did not want his family, or at least for the longest time, did not want his family to know what he was struggling with. Ultimately, at one point, you described life after high school becoming a roller coaster of diminishing returns. The highs were never as high as Zach wanted, and the lows became ever-deepening troughs. Ultimately, well, of course, what is so inspiring about this, for as tragic as the story is that Zach had this tremendous concern, first of all, for his family not to feel guilty. I mean, that is laid out so clearly in his suicide note as well as his autobiography. And he desperately wants some good to come from this. He wants his brain to be donated to science for a diagnosis to be made and for more study to be done on the nature of CTE. In our last minute or so, can you just summarize the kind of legacy that Zach Easter has left behind him in terms of prompting still more research into this phenomenon of CTE?
Well, there's a very tangible legacy with his family starting, family and friends and girlfriends starting a foundation called CTE Hope. I would encourage everyone to Google it, look it up online. They do some wonderful work helping fund this nascent scientific research into this. Brenda Easter, his mom, her ultimate goal is having a sideline saliva test. Spit in a cup and it'll tell you within minutes, hey, you have a concussion or you don't have a concussion. You can go back into the game or you can't. Right now, it would take the guesswork out of it. That's not coming a year from now. That's coming 10, 20, 30 years from now. Science takes time. But in a different sense, I think Zach's greatest legacy is his story, his cautionary tale, right? Like, that's kind of where we started in this conversation, and I hope that's where we end. And it's not, his cautionary tale isn't end football. Kids shouldn't play football. That's not it at all. It's much more nuanced than that. It's, I love football. Football made me. Football made America in a lot of ways. And yet, there are some problems with this sport and other sports, but I think much more pronounced in football, maybe just because we love this sport so much. And I think ultimately, I hate to say someone's story can be about awareness, because awareness is such a vague word. But I think that's really the case with Zach. Pay attention to concussions. Don't call it that he got his bell rung. Don't even call it a concussion. Call it a mild traumatic brain injury. And I think that even that simple word shift, all of a sudden you're like, oh, we got to take this a little more seriously than we have been taking this.
It's an amazing book, again, titled Love, Zach, Small Town Football and the Life and Death of an American Boy. Published by Algonquin Books, the author Reed Forgrave. Reed Forgrave, thank you for giving the world this important book. I suspect that Zach Easter is looking down with great gratitude that this book and his story has been shared with the world. And thanks for being part of The Morning Show today.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this important story. I really appreciate the platform.